Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Matsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. We also have an app on the iTunes Store. Just search for Radio Free Palmer. Calling in from California is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. We're taping this on the last day of November, so getting towards the end of the year, getting close to race season, but it looks like there's still not a lot of snow up there.
You know, there is absolutely no snow here in the Matsu Valley. We're looking forward to having some every day. The forecast says it's here, but it just doesn't seem to show up. But it's a balmy minus 12 here today.
Well, that's a good thing.
It is for sure. But, you know, winter will come soon as they know it, I'm sure. Hopefully we have some before Christmas. But I tell you what, races are already getting canceled. They canceled the brand-new race, the McGrath Mail Trail Race. It was a brand-new 200-miler, I believe. It was supposed to happen in mid-December. Have you heard about that one?
I have, yes. And, we talked about this in depth a few weeks ago, but It is definitely, the weather patterns have definitely been changing and are changing, and there just seems to be a lot less snow the past few years.
Right. Well, I want to make sure I apologize to everybody today. I'm doing this show from home. I have a bad clutch in my truck, and as soon as I started talking, a couple of the sled dogs that we have in the house started barking, and I didn't get a chance to take them out in time, so I apologize. But what is a mushing show without a couple of dogs barking?
It's just the ambiance. Before we get started, I know we've been talking on and off about people registering for the Iditarod. I was just checking the musher list. It looks like there are 76 mushers signed up. That's not including the three who have withdrawn. So 76 is a pretty good field.
It is, and I know today is, I believe, the last day you can register without that hefty penalty that we've talked about in the last couple of shows. This weekend is also the rookie meeting downtown, where it's a weekend where the rookies learn all they need to know about the race, and it is a mandatory meeting. If you do not show up, you do not race.
Right, and I think that we are hopeful that between now and the next couple of months that we get a whole bunch of snow in, so that we're not doing what we've been doing the past few years, which is worrying about especially the first third of the race and speculating about whether the start of the race would be shifted up to Fairbanks as it was once in the past few years. And so hopefully we'll get enough snow so that won't have to be an issue.
I sure hope so. So today, Alex, we're going to talk about trailers. And I wanted to talk about two types of trailers if we can. The first trailer is the trailer for the Sled Dog documentary that is also going to air this weekend at the Whistler Film Festival. And I have a couple of questions for you based on you being a filmmaker. The first question I have is, I guess it's more of a asking for a comment. I read something online where the film festival said that it's going to go on as planned, and people may be changing their minds a little bit after they see the film, because trailers are meant to, to stir up interest, to stir up some controversy, to stir up some people that may want to go to the show. You know, you see it all the time when you see trailers on TV for other movies. And now that we have this episode coming up or this documentary coming up. What is your take on that statement? I'm sure you've read it on some of the forums online.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to comment about the movie without having seen it. And I think that a lot of us are hoping that, because the trailer seems to be very anti-dog sledding. And the I don't know if this is exactly in the trailer, which I haven't watched in a while, but the director seems to have the idea that the only possible humane life that a dog can live is if they are basically a pet and they're indoors and they, you know, are taken out for walks, but they basically live inside a house. And while that's great for a lot of dogs, that's great for your, you know, for your family pet, and that's great for a lot of retired sled dogs who then become family pets. That's not what these dogs are. These dogs are working dogs. These dogs are dogs who are, you know, who are comfortable in very cold weather, are comfortable outside, and really, as we've talked about a lot of times on a lot of different shows, really just live to run. So if that is what the director's attitude is, I think that is very misguided. There was a lot of controversy when the trailer first surfaced, where some Iditarod mushers who had participated and been interviewed were led to believe that the movie was going to be about their adventures in running the Iditarod, and that they feel that they were taken advantage of. And you know, it's hard to say without having seen the movie, but from what I've seen in terms of what the director has said in interviews and online, it does seem like the director is very much against any kind of dog-powered sports.
Right. So, you know, of course, nobody has seen the movie yet, in particular all of the mushers here in the mushing community. And, of course, that's stirring a lot of emotion and a lot of panic about, you know, sponsors pulling out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So as a filmmaker, Alex, how do you craft a trailer for a documentary to really get that emotion, to really get those people that want to come and see the movie? I'm sitting here thinking about the Star Wars trailers. You know, it seems they have every great scene of the movie in that 30-second to a minute trailer, but that's there to get you in the theater and in the seats. What is your take on that, on how filmmakers make trailers to get the folks in the seats?
Well, you want to have something, there's two sides to it. You want to have something, first of all, that represents what the movie is. And I think we've all seen trailers for movies where the trailer makes you think you're going to see a certain type of movie, and then you go to see the movie and you think, this movie was not what they sold me. So if you do that, you are just going to annoy people. So I think it's very important that the trailer actually reflect what the movie is. And you want to present enough material so that people will be intrigued and get a sense of the tone and get a sense of maybe some of the highlights and what it's about and want to see more. You also don't want to give away everything in the trailer. And I've had conversations and arguments with people where they have said, well, you know, we don't know if it's a more balanced approach to the subject matter, but it certainly isn't balanced in the trailer. And in the trailer, it talks about, it talks about dogs being mistreated. It talks about dogs being killed. It talks about all sorts of things which are very much not the norm or best practices for how Iditarod mushers and other mushers who have large or even just recreational kennels treat their dogs. I feel like I say this all the time, but I have not seen anyone mistreating dogs. I have, in fact, it's just the opposite. People I know who are mushers, they absolutely love and adore their dogs and do everything they can to give their dogs a great and satisfying and amazing life. And for sled dogs, a lot of times that means letting the dogs do what they were born to do, which is to just run. And but everyone I know who raises dogs and who has a kennel has said that if for some reason the dog isn't up to the task of running, that's okay. They just don't run that dog. And sometimes it means that they will give the dog away or rehome the dog so that the dog can become a pet or can work with another kennel where it's less competitive or where that's not as big a deal, that they can't, you know, run as fast or run for as long. But I have never seen or heard of in recent history any of the kind of things that the trailer talks about and makes the assertion that that this is common and that it happens with everyone. And you know, the one other thing that I just wanted to mention about the trailer is it talks about Iditarod mushers as if they are millionaire athletes. And as you know, and as we've talked about on this show many, many times, people who are starting kennels and training to run the Iditarod and the Yukon Quest and other races like that are not in it for the money. And frequently, you know, in almost all cases, people who do this end up spending a lot more than they ever make. So to act as if there's some sort of huge multi-million dollar industry with rich mushers who are mistreating dogs, I think is pretty much just about the polar opposite of what's actually going on.
So last point here on the sled dog documentary, the organizers put out that statement earlier and they said that, that folks may have a different opinion after they see the movie. It may not be what they've noticed from the trailer. Of course, I don't assume that the organizers are mushers or know anything about the mushing world. I'm sure they've seen the documentary already. What is your take on that statement where they say you may be surprised about what you see and it's, you know, it's not up to, you know, to this controversy that's been brewing for the last few weeks?
That seems to be a way of trying to calm everyone down and still get people to go to the movie. We also have seen in the past couple days, this film was made with the cooperation and financial support of the CBC, which is a government organization and a government broadcaster in Canada. And there have been some of the Canadian mushers have been reaching out to their members of parliament in Canada to try to find out why the CBC has been supporting this, especially since Canada as a country has a general policy of promoting sled dog racing and promoting sled dogs as something that is emblematic of the North and of Canada. So it would seem very strange that an entity that essentially is part of the Canadian government or supported by the Canadian government would be financing something that seems to be very much against what Canada is supporting. But, you know, having said that, I go back to what I said at first, which is it's hard to know how balanced this is or how much of a fair treatment of the subject this is without having seen it. And I guess people will be seeing it this weekend, so we'll know a lot more after that.
If I may, Alex, as you were talking, I thought of another question. How is a film festival set up? Obviously, it's not set up like, you know, a typical movie theater where, let's say, Star Wars is coming out in a couple of weeks. It's going to have a wide release. It's going to make millions of dollars in a weekend. You know, everybody has a chance to see it at the same time. It's profit-driven first. A commercial release like anything that typically comes to your theater. How is a festival set up? Are these folks getting money from tickets? What is the goal of a movie that goes to a film festival other than possibly getting an award or having other people see it?
Well, you know, sometimes when movies go to film festivals, they are looking for distribution. They're looking for someone who will – a distributor who would take the movie out and put it into theaters. My understanding is that this particular movie already has distribution set up and that it's going to be on TV on the CBC later, I guess, next year or so. So they're not necessarily looking for that. And, you know, in terms of the people who put the festival together, they're always trying to find a mix of movies that are, you know, movies that will appeal to the people who come to this festival. I believe this particular festival is mostly films about winter and films about the North and things that go on in the winter in the North. So they would be looking for a mixture of films. You're always looking for a film that, you know, that people will be passionate about. And sometimes people are looking for movies that will get a lot of attention. So I don't know if they were motivated by, if they were motivated to program this movie because they thought it would be controversial and a lot of people would be talking about it. That's certainly been the case. I don't know that if people are talking about it negatively, that is helpful. But, you know, sometimes they say there's no such thing as bad publicity. I don't know that I believe that, but that could play into it as well.
Right. All right, so let's switch gears here. And again, I apologize for the dogs barking in the background. It's a little too cold to go outside and hang out in my truck at 12 below. But hey, we're gonna roll with it here, Alex. We're gonna talk about another type of trailer now. Just this week, there's been a lot of talk on the Musher forums and on Facebook and the web throughout about the rule that we briefly talked about. Towards the end of October, I guess, here on the show, when they talked about the cell phone rule and also this new trailer rule that came out. But it's really stirred up a lot of chatter this week about the good and the bad of these trailers. And for folks that may not know, for the last few years, several mushers have been using sort of a second sled or a trailer that's attached to the back of a sled. It's different than a trail dragger. A trail dragger is typically a seat that is attached to the back of the runners, and typically you can sit down and you can haul supplies, et cetera, et cetera. But this is a trailer that can often be detached, and the rule states now that you can no longer carry dogs in the trailer, but you can carry supplies or any other thing back there, but you can't carry dogs. You can still carry your dogs in the front of the sled, which has been in the rules for years. And Iditarod and Yukon Quest and just about any other qualifying race or thereabouts. What is your take on this, Alex? As a fan, I'm sure you read a lot of these statements this week.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add one other thing. In looking at the what people were saying about this new rule just this past week, they're saying that the new rule is that you won't be able to haul dogs in these trailers, and also you can't haul any of the mandatory equipment. So the mandatory equipment,
okay,
your sleeping bag and your axe and all of that has to be in the sled in front. But you can still use these trailers, and you can use them to haul dog food and straw and other things that aren't required equipment. So one of the interesting things is a lot of these are not used by the majority of mushers, but there are an article I read said that there are about 15 mushers who are competing who do use these sleds regularly. The big name people who are using these sleds and are using them primarily to haul dogs are the Seavies. So both Dallas Seavey and Mitch Seavey use these dogs very extensively, and they, as you might imagine, were very vocal in opposing this new rule because they feel like this is perhaps aimed at them. Perhaps this is aimed at as a way of cutting down the advantage that they seem to have had in the past few Iditarods. As we talked about before, having this auxiliary sled in the back lets you rest the dogs. It lets you rest two or three dogs at a time. You can really have it gives a whole new way of looking at how you're going to approach running these races. If you know that you can give dogs a rest where they just ride, and you can switch out the dogs every few hours or whatever. So that is going to make it a different race for people who are using these sleds heavily to strategize. I don't have any strong feeling about the use of these sleds. It does seem to have made it possible for people to go faster and for people to keep dogs. You know, sometimes you will have a dog that you're not sure how well it's doing. It might have a minor pulled muscle, or it might have, you know, some sort of minor thing that would clear up in a couple of hours or in, you know, a half a day, and you don't necessarily want to drop that dog. And if you have this added sled, it's easier to give that dog a little bit more time and then make a decision down the road whether or not to drop them. I also read, interestingly, Jeff King was talking about, he said that he doesn't use the sleds very much for carrying dogs, but he said that it gives his it gives him a lot more balance and control of the sled to have that weight behind him, which is something that I had never thought about, but I guess that does make sense.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me as a musher. Over the years, sleds have been getting smaller and lighter. There's a lot of people out there nowadays that use 4-foot beds. Kind of the norm for years was a 6-foot bed, 6 or 7-foot bed, in between 5 and 7 foot. So now lots of sled dog manufacturers have gone down to the 4-foot bed. But it's also interesting to me, and I guess a point of comparison I brought up during the cell phone rule about how much the cell phone rule sort of went back to Brent Sass, and when he was disqualified for having the iPod or the iPod Touch or whatever, and then a couple of years later, the cell phone rule was enacted. If you recall, Alex, I guess it was 3 Iditarods ago, Jeff King posted that video after Iditarod of him coming down the glacier, and it was a heck of a video, and he was hanging off the back of the sled, and, you know, the sled was on its side, et cetera, et cetera. It was a harrowing video, and at that time, he also had a trailer. Do you think some of this is coming back to that, you know, 3 years ago, that video that was put out? Because it's interesting, because all of the mushers say this is not something we wanted, but the Iditarod is saying we're doing this because of safety. What is your take on that?
Yeah, you know, I had read the Iditarod statement about that as well. Jeff said that he probably would have tipped over in that video that you referred to if he hadn't had the sled, because he wouldn't have had as much control. If he hadn't had the trailer, he wouldn't have had as much control going down. I've heard a couple of things that the Iditarod said. One was that they, because these trailers can become detached, they worry that the trailer might become detached or it might tip over and a dog could get loose. I also read in one of the articles that came out this week that people were very clear that this has never actually happened, but this is something that they're worried about. And several people in the ITC said that they wanted to make sure that the mushers were able to see the dogs, to have all of the dogs in front of them, whether it's on harness in front of the sled or in the sled bag, because if you have the dog in the trailer and it's behind you, you're not in visual contact with it. And, you know, if something happened and the dog got out of the sled or the sled got detached, conceivably it could be, you know, a while before you would notice that they were, that the dog was gone.
You know, that's interesting, Alex, if I can jump in here on that about being able to see the dogs. As a musher, I don't know how many times I've had to bag a dog in the front of the sled, in the sled bag. And as you know, these dogs, they want to pull no matter what. And I've had injured dogs, lame dogs from pulled muscles or sore feet or whatever, and I'll put them in the bag. And within 15 or 20 minutes, they're trying to jump out of the bag and get back out onto the trail and just going crazy trying to get back into the team. And I don't know how many times I've had to either, you know, kind of stuff them down in there so I can zip it up and kind of keep them in there contained. But if you have a lot of gear in there, sometimes that might not be possible. And they're there sort of with their head sticking out of the bag. I'm sure you've seen lots of pictures that way. But I've gone for miles and miles with one hand on my dog's collar and the other hand on the driving bow, trying to keep that dog in the bag because he was not able to run for whatever reason, whether he was injured or sore or whatever. So I don't quite understand that statement about not being able to see the dogs or if a dog can jump out. I've had many dogs try to jump out of those bags for years, and I'm sure most mushers could say the same thing.
Yeah, and it would seem to me that they might be calmer if they were in the trailer behind because, I mean, I'm sure they're aware that they're behind a sled and they're being pulled, but it also seems like if they can't actually see or they're not that close to the other dogs, that they might be calmer.
Interesting. And again, I've never used a trailer myself, so I'm just sort of going on what I know and what I've used in the past. Alex, we just have a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask one more question in regards to these trailers. What is your take on, you know, an overwhelming majority of the mushers said, we do not want this rule, but the ITC, the Iditarod Trail Committee Board said, we're going to enforce this rule and act this rule, and we're not going to necessarily listen to your concerns. What is your thought on that? You know, them making the rules and the participants just have to deal with it. You know, I guess we could compare this to just about any sport, but what is your thoughts on the committee doing one thing against most of the mushers' wishes?
It's confusing to me. I don't really understand why this change is being made, especially since this change really took most of the Iditarod community by surprise, and nobody was asking for it. Nobody saw it coming. And when they had the meeting, everyone assumed that they were just going to address the cell phone rule. So this really took everyone by surprise. I don't have a strong opinion one way or the other about it, but it does seem very, very unusual and a little bit surprising to me that there seems to be almost unanimity among the mushers that they don't like this, and yet that doesn't seem to be holding sway. So I'm wondering if there's something else going on that I just don't quite get or don't understand, or if there's some other, you know, if there's some other issue that this is really, you know, if there's something else that this is really about, because it seems hard for me to understand.
Right, and just in comparison of other sports, as you know, the NFL makes a lot of rules every year in the off season, and of course they implement them in the upcoming season. And one of the rules there that went into play this year was to move back the extra point line. I believe they moved it back 5 or 10 yards. I'm not quite sure. But just a couple of weeks ago, I think they had something like 13 or 14 missed extra points on one weekend. And a lot of people said, hey, you guys changed the rule, therefore you guys changed the methodology of the game. But, you know, they have to abide by the rules. They have to do what is told on the field. So I guess it's sort of a comparison that if the committee or the organization makes the rules, if you don't like it, don't play. What is your thought on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that for all of the, you know, squawking, I don't really want to say complaining because I'm not sure it rises to complaining, but certainly people have been saying that this isn't something that they wanted or asked for. For all of that, I think there are very few people who are going to not run Iditarod because of this. It is going to be a very major change of strategy for some of the teams, especially for the CVs and some of the other top teams. But it,
all right,
you know,
Alex,
like you said,
go ahead.
I said, like you said, you know, the Iditarod Trail Committee makes the rules, and it's their deal. And if people don't like it, they can run other races. There's the Yukon Quest. There's, you know, the Iditarod is not the only game in town, even though it is a really, really big game in town.
All right, Alex, I'm going to put you here on the spot since this is technically the last day to sign up for Iditarod here on November 30th. I know we're about 4 months or so out from that start line date, the first weekend in March. Who is your favorite for the race this year now that pretty much everybody's in the field?
I would love to see Ali Zirkel win.
That's your favorite?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to have to go with Dallas again. I know that's sort of like picking the Patriots to win the Super Bowl, but I think he may do it again. He's in that window. We've talked about that magical 5-year window of just total domination. We saw it with Lance, and we saw so many times throughout the years when we were doing our decades of Iditarod. I guess that was late last year when we were doing those. A lot of folks out there have a good 5-6 year run, and I think it's still Dallas's race to lose.
It definitely is, and if you'd asked me who I think is going to win, I'd probably pick Dallas, but I'd still like to see Allie win.
I hear you there. All right, Alex, anything before we go?
No, that's about it from here.
All right, very good. So this is Robert Forto on behalf of my co-host Alex Stein. We will be back in just a couple of weeks to talk about whatever's coming up in the Iditarod world. Until then, we'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.